warning. The Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not so fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We are on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here back in studio today with my co-host David Niles. Dave, we are back from a great time at Christ the King Parish last week with Monsignor Muggenberg, Bishop-elect, your future excellency, Bishop-elect Monsignor Daniel Muggenberg. Isn't that how we decided?
That's the official title.
That's the official title that we gave him,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So we had
it doesn't get more official than that.
Yeah. So we had a great time there with about 150 guys. If you didn't have a chance to listen to it, go back to our podcast and check it out. He did a great job talking about men's spirituality. Three things on how to keep your men's spirituality going.
That's right.
So if this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, we do three things every episode. We open, review, enjoy a manly beverage. The second thing we do is we talk about a man gear. And the third thing we do is have a man topic. That's the three things we do, Dave.
One, two, three.
One, two, three. And today, I'm really excited about a guest that we have in studio today. He is a man that helped form both Dave and I in the Catholic faith and our families.
Yeah, when I think about a parish priest, I think about this man here to my left. Because growing up, he was our parish priest, you know, for a long time.
Very long time.
So it's my pleasure to introduce to everyone Monsignor Patrick Gallus.
Oh, thank you, David. It's great to be here with you two guys. Great to see you growing up. My goodness.
How long were
you? It's about time.
Yeah. So true. How long were you at St. Benedict's?
I was there for 12 years.
12 years.
Yeah. The longest I'd ever been any place in my life, and still to this day.
Wow.
But now you're at St. Burns, which is just a few five or six miles away from St. Benedict.
7 miles west.
7 miles west.
Good people over west. There.
I rode into the sunset.
That's awesome.
Not yet, Monsignor.
But Monsignor Gallus has been a friend of the family for a long time, of both Dave and I's family. If you guys have been staying up with us, Dave and I grew up together, our families grew up together, so Monsignor has a special place in all of our family's hearts. So it's going to be a lot of fun. This episode is going to be a whole lot of fun. We're going to talk about fountain pens. We're going to talk about G.K. Chesterton and why. We'll get into G.K. Chesterton in a little bit. But let's get into the man beverage.
Okay.
Dave, I'll let you introduce it.
It's clear this is absolutely my favorite part of the whole show.
Wait. Before we do. Before we do. This episode is sponsored by a friend of ours of the Catholic Man Show. Dr. Mike Malloy. He gave us the whiskey and the man gear. So shout out to him.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. That was awesome.
Yes. So anyway, I'll let you go. Continue.
It was totally an unsolicited sponsorship.
So
it was a double surprise. Today we are drinking Macallan 12 year. I don't know if this is right or wrong, but this has been my perception over my life as a Scotch drinker that Macallan is sort of the benchmark of whiskeys, of scotches, not whiskey, I should say scotch. You know, it's kind of the mainstream scotch. Do you agree with
me? It seems like that when people talk about scotch, Macallan 12 comes up very quickly in the combo.
Like, so if someone's had one, if someone says, oh, I've only had one scotch before, it was maybe not most likely, but there's a high chance it was Macallan.
Okay.
So today we're drinking the 12 year. I'm going to just read the note.
You want cheers and then we do the note?
Good idea.
Okay. So we're on the Lord's team.
The best idea you've had in a long time. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers to Jesus. So the color,
yes,
is rich and gold. I don't need the tasting notes
to tell that.
To tell you that, I you could have asked me, I'd have told you that right away.
Right. Okay.
I'm perceptive.
Okay. What about the nose?
On the nose, it says vanilla with a hint of ginger, dried fruit, sherry sweetness, and wood smoke. Now, this is not. Oh, it is. Okay. This is exclusively matured in selected sherry oak casks.
Well, Macallan 12 is all of them are exclusively in sherry casks.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay. From Juarez, Spain. I hope that's how you say it. Juarez.
Is that correct, Monsignor? Is that no?
I can't see it.
Where? Here, it's right here on the box.
And I've had only just one sip.
J-E-R-E-Z.
I think Harris. Harris.
Harris. God,
see, Harris.
It's like sometimes you just got to go for it.
Yeah. And
do your best.
Do your best, yeah.
Okay, do you guys get any of the...
I definitely get... Okay, so...
You can't smell the sherry.
The sherry, yeah.
Flavor.
It's a very... on the nose or on the taste, you get a lot of fruit on the front. Mm-hmm. Dried fruit.
Yeah.
And the honey. And it's a sweeter. It's
You're talking
a sweeter
about
scotch.
The nose on the nose.
No, I said on the taste.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I jumped.
You jumped
ahead.
The gun a little bit.
Okay, go ahead. Read the taste.
And vanilla, I get vanilla a lot in whiskey, but I think it's a strong flavor. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. And a golden color.
And a golden color.
I yeah. can tell that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it takes a pretty refined eye to be able. Okay, so the palate says deliciously smooth, rich dried fruit and sherry, balanced with wood, smoke, and spice.
What are your thoughts, Monsignor?
I think it tastes pretty good.
Yeah, I do too. Mm-hmm.
That is most often my, if you want my honest review of a whiskey, that's about sums it up.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, my palate is not that refined. I wish it was.
Yeah, I wish it was more. Like Father Brian Ketterer, his palate is refined.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He knows, he can, it's, he's pretty incredible.
It's uncanny.
But if you're not,
it is.
If you don't like peated scotches, This would be the way to go because it's not peated.
This is a Highland Scotch, yeah. So if you don't like the
mossy peat,
exactly,
sea salt,
you want to drink. You want to stick with the Highland Scotches.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how different they are. So then it says on the finish, sweet toffee and dried fruit with wood, smoke, and spice.
Mm-hmm. I mean the main things that I get are the dried fruit, the vanilla, and the oak. Those are like the three things that like hit me. If I had to guess.
I don't like it when they put spice as a descriptor. That's sort of like putting flavor. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, yes.
Well, what spice? Maybe it's allspice.
Maybe.
Fun fact, allspice is not a suicide of all the spices. Remember like when you were a kid, you know,
right.
The fountain drinks, you go and you just get a little bit, and it's like, oh, I got a suicide.
Right.
That's not what allspice is. It's a common misconception.
Okay, well, I'm glad you...
A lot of people think that, okay?
I'm glad that you took care of that for us.
Sure. That's what I'm here for.
It's better than Old Spice.
Very true. Although Old Spice, like, caters to men.
It does.
It's true.
Their commercials
they cater to a type of men,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. So, Dave, if this is somebody's first time listening, why are we drinking on air?
We're drinking on air because it's delicious. But God made the things of this earth good, and we are simply enjoying them for their goodness. We seek to exercise the virtue of temperance on the show.
Mm-hmm.
We often say the virtue of moderation, but really it's the virtue of temperance. And in so doing, well, we realized moderation in general. Most people understand what we mean by moderation, you know?
Right.
And that's just not something promoted by the culture anymore. It's so extreme on every topic. And it's one thing we realized for us to talk about doing things moderately. And then it's another thing to actually exercise this virtue on display. And at the same time, we get to drink.
So it's a
some
win-win.
Some delicious whiskeys and beers and wine and whatever else.
And as G.K. Chesterton would say, you know, you drink when you don't, when you're already happy. You know, drink when you don't need a drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have a drink. I butchered that, but Monsignor, is that right?
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
He was not for over-drinking.
Exactly. He was not for over-drinking.
It ruined the joy of it.
That's right. That was it. Yes. So that's why we do it.
So you already gave away the man gear and the topic for today. So
I know. I like... I was just so excited.
I could tell.
I'm very excited about
like
this
right
episode.
Off the bat.
Yes.
It was boom. Okay, well,
now you know.
I guess we're doing that today.
Yeah.
But we have invited Monsignor here because, Monsignor, like, you know, I said you were our pastor for years and years and years and years and years. And I felt like even though I was young, I still knew you pretty well. But then only recently did I find out you're like a G.K. Chesterton master or something. Like, if there was a sensei level, I feel like that's the level you would be.
Well, I've been a fan for a long time. And of course, I'm 70 years old now, and my first acquaintance with him came in my senior year of high school. So I've been a fan for a long, long time.
Sensei level Chesterton.
Sensei level.
It's official.
Thank you.
You and His Future Excellency now have official titles.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of fun talking about G.K. Chesterton with Monsignor Gallus, because he brought us a couple things to show us we can talk about here in the next couple episodes or segments, but it's going to be a lot of
fun. I just want to say this. Monsignor, you brought over some handwriting of G.K. Chesterton, and you have one of his books.
Owned by him.
Yeah, that used to be not like just, oh, he wrote this. I mean, this was his book in his library.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
It's amazing.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. I'm excited. I'm pumped, guys. I'm pumped. So when we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear. We're sitting here with Monsignor Gallus. I'm Adam Manan, here with David Niles. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We are joined by Monsignor Patrick Gallus, born and raised in Chicago.
No.
Where were you?
Denver.
Was it not Chicago?
It was in Colorado.
No.
I thought you were in Chicago.
Well, I was, yeah, for a long time, 9 years. But I was born in Minneapolis, lived there until I was five, and then Dad's job took us to the Chicago area.
You think you know a guy...
I know.
And then he tells you he's from Minneapolis.
Okay, so your sister lives in Denver, right, or Colorado at this point.
In Englewood, yeah.
Englewood.
Yeah,
okay.
Southern suburb.
That's where I came.
But then, from Chicago, you became a priest of the Diocese of Oklahoma, which was later divided to be the Tulsa and Oklahoma City Diocese.
Well, I had a little bit longer journey to get to Oklahoma. I started in Chicago, studying in... at Quigley Seminary and Preparatory Seminary in downtown Chicago for 1 year. My freshman year in high school. And then the family moved to Texas, where Dad's work took us. We lived a couple of years in Fort Worth. And so I continued in the seminary in San Antonio as a student for the Diocese of Dallas-Fort Worth.
Hmm.
And then later when the family moved to Oklahoma, I became a student for the Diocese of Oklahoma City and Tulsa, Oklahoma City-Tulsa.
Hmm.
In fact, I was the last priest ordained for that diocese. So a little footnote in history. And 6 months after I was ordained a priest and sent to Tulsa, the diocese was divided east and west, Tulsa to the east, Oklahoma City to the west. And by 6 months into it, I really liked where I was. I liked the priests I was working with, and I liked the terrain, being, you know, from the upper Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
I had gotten used to grass and trees and things like that, hills.
Well, we got plenty of grass here.
Yeah. Oklahoma City is rich in flatland and semi-arid climate and a lot of wind.
Yes.
And Tulsa's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Oklahoma City's the second windiest city in the country.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The windiest being?
Cheyenne.
Not Chicago?
Not Chicago. It's called the Windy City for a different reason.
Oh.
It has to do with politicians and... blowing smoke.
Oh, well.
See,
there you are.
There you go. Learning something new every day on the Catholic Man Show.
It's from my sailing background.
There you go.
You know where the wind's at.
Mm. Cheyenne?
Cheyenne.
As much sailing in Cheyenne?
Well, I don't know if there's a lot of sailing, but there's certainly a lot of wind.
Parasailing, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe fly a kite real well.
Yeah.
She's got to be careful.
We had our
fly away.
Our man drink was Macallan 12.
Yes.
It's delicious. We actually just added a little bit of water over the break, or actually coming into this segment. And when I did,
wow,
it changed it drastically.
A lot different.
It's very different. It changed it. To me, I got more of the spices, which was, for me, different. Because normally, whenever you add water, it dilutes kind of the spiciness or pepper and brings out more of the
fruity
side. Yeah. But it was kind of the opposite for me.
I agree.
Which was interesting. But let's get into the man
gear.
That
is interesting. Even on the aftertaste, on the finish, the spice kind of hits me a little bit more after adding some water.
Which is different.
So the man gear today is a fountain pen.
Right.
And over the break, Monsignor tells us, oh, I have a collection of fountain pens.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
But, you know, okay.
God is funny. I'm just going to say that.
Okay, so, you know.
He's funny. People think he's all serious all the time.
He is funny.
I say nay.
He is funny.
I think he's hilarious.
I mean, have you seen, a duckbill platypus?
Yeah.
That is funny.
Right?
Okay, but when you think about a pen, you could say, well, what's so special about a pen? But as with everything with quality, it's all about refinement.
Yeah, and craftsmanship.
And craftsmanship, right? And so this pen is different. When you hold it, there's a little bit more weight to it.
And
I'm holding it right
you're
now.
You're holding a fountain pen in your... Yeah.
Yeah. When you hold it, there's a little bit more weight to it. And it any pen can write, but with a fountain pen, it almost more glides. When you're writing,
it's like ice skating.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it just flows a lot more. And so
paper skating.
Yeah, paper skating. So it just it flows a lot more. And Monsignor, you're well more versed in fountain pens than I am. So what are your thoughts?
I like it because of the smoothness of the nib, but not all fountain pens are smooth. Sometimes they have to be worked on. I have a pen friend. The Reverend Chris Thompson, who knows just an awful lot about pens.
Would he be your pen pal?
He's my
pen.
Very funny. And he smoothed a number of my nibs for me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to take them apart and...
Nope, don't have to. He can do it on a whetstone.
Hmm.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like the kind of thing you got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, I don't do it myself.
Yeah. I could see that ruining a pen if you went overboard.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever known a friend who got a buffer for their car and they thought, "Oh, I'm going to buff my car and make it look real good." Next thing they knew, there's no
paint.
There's no paint right there on the car. Whoops.
Yeah. So okay. So you were telling us before we started that there's different. Okay, so there's different. I forget fine, medium, and coarse or
sizes,
thicknesses.
Yeah. What do you call it?
Fine, medium, and broad.
Broad
would be the three most popular, but there's also extra fine and somewhere in between fine and medium, and then you've got the italic nib. Lots of variations on that for different purposes, calligraphy, ordinary writing.
So, what do you call it? Is that the size? What do you call that?
Well, the nibs are coming in different sizes, but the character of the tip will determine whether it's a fine, a medium, or a broad. You could have a very large number 6 nib, and the tip could be a fine point. Or you could have a very small number 4 nib, and the tip could be broad.
I see. Okay.
Okay, so full disclosure here. This week was the first week that I have ever written with a fountain pen. Okay, and I mean, when...
Do you feel manlier now?
It is really nice. Yes, I do. When Dr. Mike Malloy sent this over to me and I started writing with it, I thought, oh, I should write cursive. That was the first time that I had written in cursive in 15 years. And I'm embarrassed to say that it took me... quite a few strikeouts and redos in about two sentences because I just hadn't done it in 15 years. There's no reason for me to really do it. But whenever I was writing with it, I realized, this is why, this is the beauty of cursive writing. The beauty of cursive writing happens with fountain pens, not regular pens.
Some people can get it to happen with regular
pens. Yeah, I can't.
I can't. No, I'm not one of those people.
No, I'm not either. But
I'm not.
I was pretty embarrassed that, when you learn something, you think, for sure, I can keep doing this. It's like riding a bicycle.
Sure.
But when I was writing it, I had to really think about each letter and not picking up my pen and making sure, oh, wait, how do you uppercase a T again?
Right.
You
know, like, yeah, you know, the uppercase letters.
Yeah,
they
it's
catch
uppercase
you.
They will yeah. catch you. And so I was pretty embarrassed actually writing, but I'm going to be practicing now.
That's good.
When I first got out of college and started working and had to send notes to clients, thank you, just, you know, little stuff, it was the same thing. And I realized I need to practice my signature because it is horrific. Mm-hmm. It is the ugliest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, mine still is. It's more, this is my sign.
Right.
Not a signature.
And I was thinking, there is no way I'm sending my name. I'm representing myself like this. So I would practice. I'd sit there and just sign my name over and over and over again and try to figure out. And every now and then I would do one letter. It's like, oh.
I like that.
That, I did that letter really good that time.
Yeah.
And I would sit there and think, what was it that I did that made that letter better? I still haven't figured it out, but I have gotten better.
You're refining it.
Yes.
You're refining it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that we do need to talk about, Dave, is thank you notes. Okay, because Dave, you and I have learned some tough lessons about thank you notes mm-hmm. since we started this station. Not writing a couple thank you notes has hurt us. It's a learning curve for
yeah,
us.
Yeah.
And it is, there's something about going above and beyond of gratitude towards somebody else, of receiving an actual letter in this day and age of technology and emails and text messages, to actually sit down and write a letter and put a stamp on it and put it in the mail, and somebody receives it and knows that you took the time to actually handwrite something to them. It means a whole lot more than a text or an email or something like
totally.
That.
Totally.
What are your thoughts, Monsignor?
Oh, I think it does. I've often been told that. A person's handwriting is almost as unique as the voice print.
Yeah.
And the secret I found to legible and even beautiful handwriting is that the formation of the letters be uniform. Mm-hmm. So if you can make your lowercase letters all about the same height or so, and your capitals about the same height or so, or even if you don't, the regularity of the script adds to its beauty. And then, you know, you can practice on line paper, writing on a straight line, but uh-huh. pretty soon you don't need the line paper anymore, and you know how to make the lines go straight from left to right.
I'm just over here thinking, are my lowercase letters all the same size?
Well, like your A's and your R's and your N's
right.
and M's and so
I don't
forth.
Think they are. Okay.
Well, see, I know
this
mine
may be a
are
game changer for
because
me.
When I don't write, obviously when I don't write cursive, so whenever I actually am writing, I write in all uppercase.
Right. You like scream.
Yeah. I mean, I have bigger uppercase, but all my
it's
lowercase
like all of your
are
writing
uppercase
is yelling.
small caps.
Well, that's not uncommon. And sometimes our handwriting reveals a little bit of our personalities.
Mm-hmm.
So large writing...
I don't know what that means about me, but...
large writing would indicate a person who's open and sociable, friendly. Smaller writing might indicate some proficiency and concentration and so forth.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's very interesting. Okay, so when we get back, I'm really excited about this topic with a guy who knows a little bit about this topic, Monsignor Gallus, sitting here with David Niles. I'm Adam Minahan. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Raise it. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles and our friend, Monsignor Patrick Gallus. We're going to be talking about Mr. Gilbert Chesterton, otherwise known as G.K. Chesterton, better known as G.K. Chesterton.
Mm-hmm.
Several people have said that G.K. Chesterton's autobiography on St. Thomas Aquinas was the best ever written,
mm-hmm.
which is really pretty incredible.
Yeah, considering the person who said it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Especially, and just the person in general, subject. Mm-hmm. St. Thomas yeah. Aquinas. Mm-hmm. How many people have written on St. Thomas Aquinas?
Lots.
So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. The man who said that was Etienne Gilson. He was a noted international expert on the writings of St. Thomas. He said Chesterton brought him close to despair. He said he'd been studying St. Thomas all his life, and he could never have written a book as good as that.
It's impressive.
And from what I understand, this may be just a fable, but Chesterton asked his secretary to go collect all these books about him from the library.
Halfway through the project.
Halfway through the project.
Halfway through the book.
And that he opened so he had this stack on his desk, he opened the top one and kind of thumbed through it and said, okay, and then finished the project.
That's right. That's right.
That's incredible.
He had an amazing ability to extract the heart of what an author was saying.
And that's true, because that's what he does. You know, he's so quotable. Maybe, yeah. You know, he's one of the most quotable people.
Yeah.
It seems like he was, you could open up his writing anywhere, and he's in the middle of saying something profound.
Some kind of discourse,
profound,
yeah.
You know, that... He just had a way of seeing the world and seeing the truth behind circumstances and then portraying that truth in some type of analogy.
Mm. He was a master of that.
And the paradox.
And paradoxes.
His illustrations, his similes, metaphors were just extraordinary.
Yeah.
And his wit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The wit, like, it seems like whenever you talk about G.K. Chesterton, it's almost impossible to not talk about his wit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And his writing.
Mm-hmm.
Monsignor, you had a quote that you wanted to share with us. You were off the air. You told us that this was the quote that spurred your love for G.K. Chesterton.
This is the hook, line, and sinker.
This is what got it all started. In high school.
Yeah, I was in the seminary. It was our senior year. It was English Lit. We were doing a survey of English Lit, and of course, you know, the book that we were using included a good selection of modern Catholic authors. And when we got to G.K. Chesterton, there was an excerpt from his book Orthodoxy, and the chapter that we were given to read was The Paradoxes of Christianity. And toward the end of that chapter are some words that so struck me that I said, I've got to read more written by this man. And so this is the quote that struck my interest in those long ago days. The church in her early days went fierce and fast with any war horse, yet it is utterly unhistoric to say that she merely went mad along one idea, like a vulgar fanaticism. She swerved to left and right so exactly as to avoid enormous obstacles. She left on one hand the huge bulk of Arianism, buttressed by all the worldly powers to make Christianity too worldly. The next instant, she was swerving to avoid an Orientalism that would have made it too unworldly. The Orthodox Church never took the tame course or accepted the conventions. The Orthodox Church was never respectable. And then jumping a little bit. To have fallen into any of those open traps of error and exaggeration which fashion after fashion and sect after sect set along the historic path of Christendom, that would indeed have been simple. 'Tis always simple to fall. There are an infinity of angles at which one falls, only one at which one stands. To have fallen into any one of the fads from Gnosticism to Christian Science would indeed have been obvious and tame. But to have avoided them all has been one whirling adventure. And in my vision, the heavenly chariot flies thundering through the ages, the dull heresies sprawling and prostrate, the wild truth reeling but erect. Now that passage so got me that I've been a fan of his ever since. He had a great knack of providing visual imagery in his writings to illustrate a point. And that came in part from his artistic temperament. He trained early on to be an artist, and that quality in him never left. him. It was a great resource and a wonderful way of making clear sometimes extremely difficult topics. He was a genius at simile and metaphor, and as you said, wit. Mm-hmm. He was funny.
It's interesting too. Here's a man that has never taught at a. He wasn't a professor. He never taught at any college. Mm-hmm. You know, he studied to be an artist. Mm-hmm. Yet he has gone down as, you know, one of the most prolific authors of our time, you know, mm-hmm. of the 20th century. Not only that, he's also been known as one of the best philosophers. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't even trained in philosophy.
No.
But it's because he was, you know, they call him the apostle of common sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that plays a whole role. I mean, Dr. Peter Kreeft says that he's one of the best philosophers of our time. Mm-hmm. And that's saying a whole lot from,
sure.
you know, a man who is
maybe the best philosopher of our time.
Right, exactly.
He had an uncanny ability to intuit the truth. And some have said this is possibly one of the qualities that might qualify him for sainthood. He had a kind of mystic intuition of the truth mm-hmm. and a marvelous way of expressing it. Mm-hmm.
He was on. He, not only was he, you know, prolific on paper, but he was also on air. He was. He did a ton of radio.
He did a little radio toward the end of his life. Yeah, he was a popular speaker on the BBC.
BBC.
Yeah,
correct.
Some of his messages are still available in audio recording. I've got them.
That's pretty. Yeah, I mean. Okay, so let me ask you this, Monsignor. If somebody's just now hearing about G.K. Chesterton, mm-hmm. or they've heard of him, but they've mm-hmm. never read anything, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. what would you suggest for them to pick up first? Because I've heard, like, The Everlasting Man, mm-hmm. which C.S. Lewis, attributed to some of his conversion.
Or The Man Who Was Thursday.
Or The Man Who Was Thursday.
Yeah, I loved it.
And Orthodoxy. Those are mm-hmm. pretty meaty.
Really are.
Mm-hmm. Would you suggest them jumping straight into that?
Well, I say different strokes for different folks, but one easy way, I think, into Chesterton, if you like short stories and mysteries, and I don't suppose anybody wouldn't like to read something fairly brief mm-hmm. and intriguing. The Father Brown mystery stories, I think, are superb. Mm-hmm. And the first in almost any anthology of Chesterton's Father Brown mysteries is The Blue Cross. It's the first one. And if you read anything by Chesterton as a first introduction to him, I'd say that The Blue Cross might be a good way to begin.
Father Brown has been something that's even picked up on TV. They have a TV show on mm-hmm. Netflix. Actually, you can look it up, Father Brown, to watch that. It's based on his writings. Have you seen it by chance?
It's loosely based on his writings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have not heard of it or seen it.
It's like, okay,
is
so
it supposed to be any good?
It's like missed. Well, Monsignor,
have you seen it, Monsignor?
I haven't, but I've heard about it, and I'd say that probably it's loosely based on the character created by G.K. Chesterton. Father Brown is like a clerical Columbo. He looks bumbling, but he's brilliant, and
and he seems to always push people back to reconciliation and to making the right, doing the right thing at the very end.
It's always a very moral mm-hmm. Story and lesson. And there's some more meaty takeaway from it than just your average detective story.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I'm going to have to go look that up.
Yeah, I actually watched the first couple episodes of Father Brown on Netflix.
So what did you think?
They were really good.
It was well produced.
Yeah, it was very intriguing. One of the guys who plays in Lord of the Rings is in it. Don't ask me who or anything because I didn't watch Lord of the Rings, but that's what I was just told.
He's never seen Lord of the Rings, Father.
I've seen the whole 3-part movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of them.
Yeah.
So
the whole trilogy.
I know. We're gonna get more people emailing us saying how ridiculous it is that I have not seen the Lord of the Rings.
Because it is ridiculous. That's why.
It's
ridiculous.
I know. Okay. Oh, we're not have time to go into that. So, Dave, do you have anything that you want to say before we hit? Because we're about to hit break.
Well, I just am glad. I'll admit something. The only thing I've read of Chesterton is an essay called Cheese, mm-hmm. and it was very good. Mm-hmm. And I know that I am deficient. You know, if you look at your reading as an appetite, mm-hmm. that's the vitamin I'm deficient in, is G.K. Chesterton vitamin for my soul. So you think, I'll tell you, I don't get excited about reading fiction these days. Mm-hmm. And I need to read a good fiction so that I can dispel myself of this notion. Mm-hmm. So maybe this would be a good place for me to start.
Might be. You know, he wrote 2 1,500-word essays every week for 36 years.
So there you go. You can look
a lot of essays.
Yep. Okay, when we get back, we're going to continue talking about Mr. G.K. Chesterton. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles and Monsignor Gallus. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here in studio with Adam Minahan, Monsignor Patrick Gallus. We're discussing a little Chesterton this evening. If you're enjoying this conversation on the man, the myth, the legend, G.K. Chesterton, and you think to yourself, man, this is awesome. What can I do to support conversations of manliness like this? I'll tell you what you can do. You can go to our website, thecatholicmanshow.com.
Love it.
And sign up to join the Council of Man. Mm-hmm. Because manhood has a council.
That's right.
And it's on our website.
The Council of Man.
Okay, and you can sign up to support us by donating $10 a month. We will send you a Glencairn glass with the Catholic Man Show logo laser etched. We use lasers over here, guys, because that's what men like, lasers.
Lasers, yeah, that's right. Dishwasher safe.
Dishwasher safe. Glencairn glass to make your whiskey more manly and more awesome.
That's right. The Council of
Man. Join the Council of Man. You'll also get access to all the private content that we produce just for the Council of Man, mm-hmm. and access to the private Facebook group where all things manly happen. It's pretty awesome. So pray about it, okay?
Yeah.
Pray about it.
Take action. Men take action.
That's right. Okay, so, Monsignor.
David.
You are part of this elite group of Chesterton book owners that are seeking to digitize the
Chesterton Library.
Yes, the works of G.K. Chesterton.
Yeah, it's a work of the American Chesterton Society. I'll give you a shout out to Dale Ahlquist, the president of the American Chesterton Society. If you want to know something about G.K. Chesterton, all you need to do is just search for their website, the American Chesterton Society, and you'll come up with a rich fund of information about G.K. Chesterton and the conferences that are held every year. Right now, one of the projects is to digitalize, to reduce to electronic files all of the things written by G.K. Chesterton and the things written about him during his lifetime. And I'm one of those scribes, so from time to time I receive those articles in a kind of photostat version or copied version. And I type them out according to the established format and submit them. I feel like I'm doing my little bit for G.K.
Do you think that counts as a spiritual work of mercy?
I do.
Yeah. I do too.
Instruct the ignorant.
Yeah, there's so much.
If I were you, I'm not kidding. When Jesus says, you know, what did you do? You know, like the sheep's and the goat's conversation that mm-hmm. we're all going to have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, well, remember that time I was digitizing?
Okay, so there's
something. Jesus would be like, oh yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was good.
All right. Come on in. Well, all right.
One point for you.
Yeah.
Monty, there is something that I really want to make sure we get to, and that is the relationship that G.K. Chesterton had to George Bernard Shaw, mm-hmm. a man who is totally opposite of G.K. Chesterton, mm-hmm. From all the way physical appearance-wise mm-hmm. to ideology,
right.
Philosophy, everything, they're total opposites. Mm-hmm. Yet, they called each other the friendly enemy. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of G.K. Chesterton, the relationship of G.K. Chesterton and Shaw, and how, even though they were different, how much they took away from each other, and how that lacks today.
Well, G.K. Chesterton liked and admired George Bernard Shaw, and early on wrote a kind of critical appreciation of him. He said that Bernard Shaw was like the Venus de Milo. All there was of him was perfect. he lacked a little bit, like arms and so forth. Shaw said about the book, he said, "It's the best work of art I have yet inspired." they were friends, but diametrically opposed in their social philosophy, you could say, and their religious philosophy and faith. But Chesterton did not make an enemy of George Bernard Shaw, nor of H.G. Wells, with whom he greatly disagreed. And his book, The Everlasting Man, was in part a response to Wells' Outline of History, in which there was nary a mention of Jesus Christ. And so Chesterton wrote The Everlasting Man as a counterbalance, showing Christ to be the very center of human history. And that book, by the way, The Everlasting Man, was a part of the path to conversion for C.S. Lewis, who to that point was an avowed atheist, and said that he found in The Everlasting Man the first account of historic Christianity that made sense to him.
So without that book, C.S. Lewis would not
might never have become a Christian,
and probably would never have written, you know, what is known as, you know, maybe the best
apologetic
series of, you know, of all time.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Mere Christianity, but then I realized you're talking, this is a Lord of the Rings deal.
Lord of the Rings. I mean,
the Chronicles of Narnia.
The Chronicles.
J.R.R. Tolkien would
yeah.
He was a Catholic friend of C.S. Lewis, and Tolkien also was extremely important in Lewis's conversion. Very important.
But isn't it weird that in this day and age that there's not very, like, if you oppose somebody else's views, it's hard to be a friend with them, and yet G.K. Chesterton had this, like, a relationship with so many people that built those bridges, even though that he didn't agree with them.
Exactly. He had a great charity about him. But it didn't ever mean that he wasn't going to say what he thought and say it with at sometimes sharpness. But it was always an argument and never a quarrel. And that really was noted by those he disagreed with. H.G. Wells said, I'm not a believer, but if there are saints, G.K. Chesterton is surely one of them.
I mean, that's what you hope to... I mean, I hope that's what they say about us, you know?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. That is the response that the Christian life should be evoking from those we disagree with, you know? I don't believe in what he says, but if there are saints, he's one of them.
Right, it's this happy medium of relating but not compromising truth.
That's right, yeah.
And today, you can't disagree with anyone without the... opposition feeling that, you know, oh, well, how dare you say that I could possibly be wrong, you know?
Would you say that
just frustrates me?
Our world lacks healthy arguments?
Yeah, we avoid them.
We avoid them at all costs, almost.
Yeah.
I mean, most people do, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, the usual proverbial wisdom is there are two things you never talk about, politics and religion. And Chesterton said those are the only two things worth talking about.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is that, no, we should be talking about those things more often. Mm-hmm. There's something about brotherhood that is supposed to naturally develop this friendly conflict. You know, you watch little boys, they fight with each other. Mm-hmm. Literally and, you know, argumentatively. And when it's over, it's over. And everything, you know, that's the thing about men, is that we can be... two men can argue with each other and get into a fist fight and literally be trying to punch the guts out of the other one. And then when it's over, it's like, you want to get a beer?
I know.
Oh, yeah, sure. All right. You're buying. Okay. All right. Yeah.
One other thing that I want to get to before we run out of time is the idea of maybe Chesterton, if he does become a saint, possibly, mm-hmm. Lord willing, mm-hmm. He could possibly be a patron saint of
childless children.
Childless.
Is that where you're going?
Childless.
Childless parents.
Parents. Yeah. Childless parents. Talk a little bit about that, Monsignor.
Well, he and his wife Frances couldn't have children, and they were deeply grieved by that. But in the course of their life together, they were brought into contact with families who had children, and those children were very dear to them, and they kept up contact with the kids, and the kids considered them their aunt and uncle. And the Chesterton secretaries also were like adopted children to them. And the last secretary that Chesterton had was a lady named Dorothy Collins. And Dorothy became very close with Frances. And to the point that Chesterton died in 36, and a few years later Frances died, Dorothy Collins, whom I met as a wow. seminarian in Belgium, I crossed the channel to, among other things, visit the home of G.K. Chesterton and knocked on the door of the home, and Dorothy Collins answered the door.
Wow.
This was a cold call, and I said I was a great fan of G.K. Chesterton, and would it be okay if I, you know, came in? And she said, yeah, please come in and have some tea. So she said, is there anything in particular you'd like to see? And I said, yes, I'd like to see a something in Chesterton's handwriting. So she disappeared and came back with a little piece of paper, and it was a poem by Chesterton on St. Frances, one I had read and very much liked. And so that's one of my cherished memories. Well, at any rate, Dorothy Collins lived into the 1970s. And when she died, she was buried in the same grave as Gilbert and Frances Chesterton. So the Chesterton grave in Beaconsfield, England, is also the grave of Dorothy Collins.
Wow.
Which is, I mean... Yeah.
And I'll bet that, I mean, G.K. Chesterton, in my opinion, is most certainly in heaven. And, you know, but that would have just brought so much joy to him, I would imagine, on earth, in his earthly life, mm-hmm. to have known that essentially this woman became like his daughter in so many ways.
Yeah, he's a great example of living a joy-filled life, wanting something, but maybe not what God desired for him.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Monsignor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
today.
You, Adam. Thank you, David.
It's been a blessing. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.